Given the damage they've caused.
Restraining orders against me. I'm sorry. It's not my fault. They're just too sensitive.
So welcome to Gemini season, everybody. It is kind of a critical moment right now for the United States. The United States is actually going through what is called its Pluto return right now. Pluto is returning to the exact spot that it was when the United States was formed and the Declaration of Independence was created. But something I really want to discuss with you guys this week is this movement with Saturn into Aquarius that we've been talking about for a minute. So Saturn was in Aquarius from 1962 to 1964. It was also in Aquarius in the beginning of the early 90s, and it has moved to Aquarius currently. So Saturn is a karmic planet, and it governs restriction, government, structures, and the powers that be. And Aquarius, a revolutionary planet, is erratic energy. And it's erratic because it is the sign of revolution. It's forward movement. It's thinking about things that are very humanitarian. But you have these two things meeting. Something that wants a lot of structure, something that is structure, with something that wants complete anarchy and chaos. We have these two things meeting. So I think astrology is just looking at patterns historically and studying them and looking for the overall themes. So it would be fair to talk about the fact that, you know, police brutality is nothing new. But in all three cases of 1964, 1992, and 2020, where there have been riots, these were brought on by the need for revolution in these marginalized communities that had not been heard, that had been victimized, that had been hurt, beaten, and left basically to their own devices with little to no help. And this has been going on, honestly, since the beginning of the United States. It's something the United States needs to face with this Pluto return that's happening right now. But I think about the 64 riots, I think about the 1992 riots, and now I'm thinking about the riots now. And they were all brought on by police brutality towards people of color. And I think that that's something we should really look at. Especially because it is nothing new. It is not new. I can't say this enough times. But what made the 92 riots pop off the way that they did? Okay, Aquarius rules technology. So think about the fact that the LA riots were started because someone actually took the time to film Rodney King and what happened to him. What had happened to him had happened to hundreds of other people of color, but it was the first time that it was filmed. You could not look away. Justice has to be served when it's right in your face. And I think about 64, and I think about the innovation of television. The first time you could visually see what was happening into the world with these marginalized communities and how they had been treating, you could not turn away. And it was documented. And now in 2020, we have access to cell phones and social media. So these things can be spread like a virus fast. Information is crucial for revolution. And Saturn in Aquarius is showing us this once again. And it's something to really pay attention to as we begin to think about the future that we want to see that is revolutionary. This is not the time to be silent. This is the time to document the truth. This story will go on forever till the end of time unless we do something about it. So if you're listening to this, pay attention to the patterns. Pay attention to the environment. Pay attention, even if you think it's silly, to something like astrology, because it is going to show you these patterns and they are worth investigating and doing something about it. You are a product of your environment. What do you want to see your environment be? Today on the podcast, I have my friend Lauren, and we're talking about attachment theory today. And I wanted to give some useful information for those of you guys who are sitting at home about attachment theory and how these issues or triggers can be brought up while we're in a time of crisis. I love Lauren. She always makes my day a little bit brighter. We are both Mercury dominant people, thinkers, and I just love being able to bounce ideas off of her. And I find when we are together, my thoughts seem to move more fluidly. So I appreciate Lauren quite a bit. So I hope you enjoy this conversation and stick around.
So with the retrograde season, it's affecting communication, relationships, beauty, the way we deal with money. Lauren, you're a Gemini rising. God bless you. How are you handling it, taking over your first house, the house of self?
Yeah, so I feel, believe it or not, I feel beside myself a bit with all of this happening. I think everybody has some of that happening right now, and it's like manifesting in different ways with everyone. But like for me as a Gemini rising, I need like energy from other people, and I'm fairly introverted most of the time. Like I do enjoy time by myself alone with my thoughts, but I need varying levels of stimulation from other human beings and other life. So
that also goes into your human design being triple split. Yeah. So you need a variety of energy sources throughout the day. Have you tried applying plants or I guess even like water or anything to your daily routine?
So I have a lot of plants. I should have more plants inside my home. Most of mine are outside, and with the weather, it's been raining off and on for days. So I haven't spent as much time outside as I normally would, because I don't have to like be outside watering, and I don't want to just go stand outside in the rain. But I need to, my office is in our basement, which is finished, and there are windows, but I don't see people walking by. I don't have like any sort of simulation of like looking outside. I need to remind myself and allow myself time to like walk around out on my deck and just like breathe fresh air, because I'm missing a lot of the stimulation I would normally get from like being social and seeing my friends. You know, whether it be just like meeting one person for coffee and getting that, you know, energy from just a connection with one person, or like going to the bar, going to a show and like being out until 3 a.m, you know, like I need a little bit of that variety, and I just haven't had that for, you know, over 2 months now. So it's been really draining. I'm trying to manage it.
Of our BBs are triple split definition people, or even just identify as extroverts and needing a lot of variety in their routine. What are some things that you have found that have been helpful to at least give you that sense? And also, I want to acknowledge you also have like a huge shift of energy, because you don't have Will, your son, there.
Right.
You have the new energy of your new relationship and being moved in with this new partner. Mm-hmm. But also, I want to give 2 seconds to the fact that you also are dealing with the grief of Bean. So yeah. It's like you have your pet who had just passed. So right. It's like this weird energy shift in and out. So that's got to be kind of, that's got to be taken
so well. So yeah, it's been kind of, I mean, we moved into our new house right at the height of all of this happening. It was the end of March or like middle of March. And it was the weekend before the stay-at-home order was put in place for where we're at. And so normally I would be visiting my son and I would be seeing him, but I haven't seen him since December because of all of that's happening. His caretakers are his grandparents on his dad's side, and they both have lung issues and are immunocompromised. So I haven't been able to see him, out of fear for possibly exposing them to something if we're traveling and visiting. So it's just not really been feasible. So I had this lack of energy from seeing and spending time with my child. I am moved into this new home with my partner who I love and adore, but we are together 24/7. You know, we're both working from home. We're, you know, I'm working it downstairs, he's working in our guest room, we're still interacting a lot during the day, but it's like I miss missing him when I'm at work. I miss, you know, having time.
I miss you, you don't go away.
Right, yeah, I joke with him about this, but it's like, I miss missing him. Like, I love being around him, and I'm thankful to have a partner and be in a healthy relationship that I can be stuck with someone for 2 months straight and not really get sick of them. Yeah. But I miss missing him, and I miss us having you know, being able to see our friends and go out and do things and live independently of each other, because it makes us value the time that we get together. It makes it that much more special. So there's like this kind of, you know, one source of constant energy, which is great and I'm thankful for, but it's like I need some different stimuli. And like you said, it was like 5 days after we moved into this new home, my pet Bean, my soulmate, my firstborn child, like my absolute baby, passed away unexpectedly of an undiagnosed heart condition. And so it was like all of this panic of what's happening in the world and, you know, all of these things, everything shutting down and me being, you know, working from home and not being able to see my child and all the like financial insecurity that comes with everything that's happening right now. And then like the one source of constant affection and love and connection that I've had for the last 10 years of my life since I adopted her was just gone suddenly. And like I thought she was gonna live, she was gonna be one of those cats that was like old and crotchety and lived to be like 25 years old, but she was 11. And so it was like, it was a shock. And this is like a total sidebar city, but like I've heard that there, like with all of the anxious energy and all of the uncertainty and kind of panic that's been happening, there's been like spikes in paranormal activity. And I definitely believe that like Bean's spirit is here in our home. And it's so strange, but like, you know, I'll hear. Okay,
tell us all about the spooky stuff. I want to hear about Spooky Bean.
Yeah. Okay. So like people probably think I'm nutso, but like, I know that our souls, some, you know, our bodies die eventually. I don't know what our souls do. You know, I haven't reached that point where I understand, or I'm not there yet, but like, I'll hear her collar jingling in the hallway. You know, I'll hear her scratching at a door. And I know that it's not, I have another cat as well. And I know that it's not him because he doesn't have his front claws. You know, I'll like, today I was out on my deck in a break from the rain and I was arranging some plants that I had out there. And like out of the corner of my eye, I saw her reflection looking out of our sliding glass door, like through the glass. Like it was her. I know it was her. I saw her. And I turned my head and it nothing was there. But it's like she's so ever present in our home still that like we've lost the physical part of her. But like, you know, I'm a very firm believer in the fact that one way to keep people alive and the way that people live beyond death is to like keep their memory alive and to constantly be talking about them and thinking of them and remembering them and the, you know, things about them. And that applies with pets as well. And it's absolutely like helped me with all of this. It's just like, you know, obviously a huge amount of pain, and it sounds insensitive, but I struggled more with losing my cat than I did when I lost my mom.
I think pets are consistent, and that goes into like, I guess that's the topic today of attachment theory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pets can be, when you grow up, I'm gonna say this, I've actually never heard anyone say this, but this is something I feel very strongly about. When you grow up with a poor, or an insecure attachment style of any kind, pets can be very reassuring because they're consistent.
Absolutely.
And when you don't have your pet anymore, that can be such a greater loss than a human life, because that's the one thing that is consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've said that all along. She my life over the last 10 years has changed so many times in so many ways, and I've experienced so much trauma and pain and also joy and, you know, things to celebrate over these last 10 years. But she was the constant through all of it. You know, she saw me through abusive relationships, graduating college, starting a career, having a child, marrying a partner, divorcing a partner, finding a new partner. I mean, she was the only part of my life that stayed the same through all of that. And, you know, I struggled really deeply with my mental health right around the time that I adopted her. I went through a really terrible traumatic breakup that was very violent, and I ended up having to move away from the city I was living in to get away from this partner. But I wanted to take my own life at that time because I was just so hopeless. And the only thing that stopped me was the fact that my cat would no longer have someone to care for her. So I mean, she like legitimately saved my life, and I felt like I owed her my entire soul. I still feel that way. You know, it's just such a specific type of love that you can give to a pet, and they give it right back unconditionally. So it's been really difficult.
I feel like it's like losing a child.
Yeah, that's honestly what it feels like, and I can't understand what it would feel like to lose a child, because I've never experienced that type of loss, but I would imagine that it's very similar to what I felt losing her, because I've always said she's my firstborn. I never cared about another human being or another being, another soul on this planet until I adopted her. Her needs were always before mine, and it developed that very motherly, you know, it taught me how to be a mom, and it taught me how to put someone else's needs before my own when I never needed to do that before in my life.
Well, maybe this is a bit of an end of an era. So let's celebrate the life of Bean by getting excited about this new awesome stage of your life with a healthy partner who I love, by the way.
Yes.
I adore your partner, and I adore you, and I adore all of the amazing changes that you have made in the years that we have been friends. I feel like we're soulmates. Like, I really feel so thankful for our friendship. I feel like, I don't know, you have been that friend for me. You have been that consistent friend for me, and I just appreciate you so much, and you never judge me, and I'm honest with you, and you call me out when I need to be called out, but you don't judge me, and you are just so nurturing and kind. And I think if Bean taught you those things, thank you, Bean, because I'm so lucky to have you as a friend. And I think one of the things that you and we wanted to talk about attachment theory today, because we're in lockdown and we are all feeling super insecure and unsafe, and this is bringing up a lot of trauma for a lot of people. I read a statistic today, the suicide rate obviously is really bad right now, and I want to talk about some of the root issues in the next couple of weeks as to why we have some of these feelings that we do about isolation, not feeling connection, feelings of bleakness, feelings of we can't make it another day. And I think a lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of it stems from childhood trauma and not getting our needs met, and not knowing how to speak about our needs in an appropriate way. And I think that attachment theory is extremely important to learn about, even as a friend. Mm-hmm. If you are making friends, if you are a business owner, and you run a small business, it's even great to know this with your employees, because the more that you know and you're aware of their attachment style, the more you can nurture and not get annoyed by things and understand where people are coming from. And so the basic theory of attachment, or the basic consensus of attachment theory, is that the way in which we are, the way in which we attach to our caregivers in our primary years is influential to the way that we relate in relationships, whether they're friendships or romantic relationships. And there are different variations of these styles, which we're going to go over today. And I want to talk about them individually, and then I want to talk about As we talk about them, I'd like to talk about ways that they could come up during this isolation and then maybe some suggestions on how to handle them.
Right. Yes.
Okay. So, Lauren, we made some notes. You are the note giver.
So which, I guess I can talk what I would
let's talk about our own. Okay, so let's start with anxious attachment. Okay. So what is the origin of anxious attachment and how does it manifest?
So anxious attachment generally develops, and this is what I would consider is pretty close to my attachment with my mom as a young child. So this usually develops when there's a lot of inconsistency in the parent, in like their, you know, their availability, be it emotional or physical, in their responsiveness to a child. You know, that could be being smothering one moment and being constantly around and really active and apparent, and then disappearing. And I experienced that a lot being the child of someone who struggled with drug use. There was a lot of that. And so as an adult, this can manifest in really unhealthy ways. You know, you can become very clingy. You can, you know, really, really, really seek out strong attachment to someone and then be terrified that they're going to leave you. You can be really hypersensitive to things. You know, often you give a lot more than you receive because you've developed that, you know, maybe if I do this, then they'll be around more and things like that.
So it's just how you attune to others. Like, you have a very giving aura. This is like very empathic stuff. And then like also they can struggle to communicate their needs and desires clearly as a result of that as well. And so these people really value that. Like, let's talk about what they actually value. They value deep connection and intimacy, mm-hmm. and perception, and they're very perceptive to subtle changes in others. So like if you do anything different, they're gonna notice.
They're going to notice and they're going to like overanalyze it and immediately start to, you know, it's anxious, it's anxiety. So those gears start turning and it becomes, you know, really unhealthy, the like hamster on the wheel of just these thoughts that become really unhealthy. And it's hard to break out of that cycle, especially once it starts and when it's been going for so long.
I feel like I have an anxious attachment style. Mine's a little disorganized, but I think the big thing for me is just feeling like I'm a burden, feeling like I'm too much, feeling like I'm too intense. And so I think that that's a big thing that comes up, and it could come up right now with this retrograde season, with a lockdown. And let me just say, you are not a burden. No, none of us are a burden. None of us are too much. This is such a negative thought that we need to get out of our heads.
Yes, absolutely. And I have struggled in the past being such an empathetic, emotional person. I'm a water sign. I'm a Cancer sun, Pisces moon. I'm like ruled by my emotions. They are always on my sleeve. They are who I am. And I have been told that that is a burden. I have been told by people that that is too much for them to handle.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Sometimes that is too much for certain types of people who don't know how to handle that. Mm-hmm. It's okay if someone cannot handle your intensity or your emotions.
They're just not
for you. Exactly. They're not for you. They're not apt to, they're not able to handle you or understand you in the way that you need to be understood. That doesn't make you a burden. That just means that person doesn't understand you. And I struggled a long time trying to make sense of what that means for me, because
especially if you're like super empathic, because you're so used to being attuned to the needs of others. Like, it's not outside of our realm to imagine how others are feeling at any time.
Right.
So it's like frustrating at times for us when it's like, this is so simple. Why can't you see how I feel this way?
Right. Exactly.
So what are things we can do to be self-soothing in this moment, like when that comes up for us as people with anxious attachment?
So what a few things that we can do if you have a very anxious attachment. First and foremost, it's easier said than done, and I personally struggle with it sometimes too, but learn to communicate how you're feeling. Acknowledge that you're feeling a certain way, acknowledge what you need in this moment, and don't be afraid to tell people that. Telling someone how you're feeling is such a cathartic thing once you get it out, and people with anxious tendencies can avoid that. You know, they don't know how to put into words all of the emotions that they're feeling. So you really have to break it down. You know, what am I feeling? Why am I feeling this way? What do I need? And how can I tell the person that I need to express this to? How do I tell them that? So that's going to be like a huge, communication is going to be huge in being able to process it and overcome it. Being able to communicate that is like a huge thing. Understanding, like, just like I said, breaking down your emotions and trying to understand why, you know, acknowledge that you feel certain ways, be gentle on yourself if you are feeling a way, if you feel abandoned, if you feel alone, if you feel isolated. Be easy on yourself. It's okay. A lot of people are feeling that way right now.
I feel like it's really good to just be like, you know, if you feel like someone is distancing themselves from you or needs space, to say, hey, I recognize you have a heightened need for space right now. How can I make this work? I value consistency. Can you just
right.
reassurance that everything is okay every now and then? Right. That would really help me and know that I'm just giving you the space that you need.
Right.
Your thing, but we're okay. Because I think it's always just the overanalyzing, is this person mad at me? Does this person hate me?
Yeah, it's a balance of like, yeah. knowing that you can and should check in,
yeah.
with someone, yeah. who maybe distancing themselves because they might need the space. They might need this time, this alone time, to work through whatever they're working through. Knowing that you can and should check in with people, but knowing the boundaries of when that is appropriate, how often that's appropriate. Are you reaching out because you're concerned for that person? Or are you reaching out because you're anxious and uncertain of where they stand in regards to your relationship with them? So it's really important of, you know, acknowledging why you feel the need to reach out to someone. And, you know, is it for them? Is it for you? Is it both?
Yeah.
And is it appropriate?
And I think just knowing that this is an unprecedented time too, and that
yeah.
have their own stuff going on, is just super important to reiterate to anyone who has an anxious attachment. Time is so unreal to people like us, until we learn how to mm-hmm. emotionally regulate. Thank God I'm in a much better spot with that. But
right.
It can seem like no time has passed when it's been only an hour for someone else and they're busy working and doing something, and
yeah.
you're just like, wow, I asked a really important question and they have not even responded.
Right. And you've been pacing and stressing and asking a million questions in your head.
Yes.
You know, time is so different for different people.
Absolutely. And I think it's also like a big thing, and I saw this online the other day, and I think this is really important, and if you see it, screenshot it. And if it's okay to send the following text: hi, I saw your text message. I have not had a chance to respond to it because I'm having a little bit of trouble processing right now. I promise I'm not ignoring you. I will talk to you when I'm in a better space. And literally telling somebody that, if someone told me that, I would immediately back off and know that it's
done. Oh, yeah.
So, like, it's totally... Ghosting on someone is such a bad idea. If you have the ability to not ghost on anybody, don't...
Yeah.
It's okay to send a text like that. And it's okay. And, like... And I encourage you to send texts like that, because so many people have anxious attachment styles and they're just imagining scenarios in their head.
Right.
Something terrible... they think something terrible about them. And it's
okay. Right.
So let's talk a little bit about the fearful avoidant.
Okay, so fearful avoidant attachment usually develops when a caregiver is very neglectful. So, you know, they
feel exploited in relationships, and they can like pull away from relationships because they feel overwhelmed or rejected. And they can also just have like a low self-image and low self-esteem. And so they have like a bit of the anxious tendencies and a bit of avoidant tendencies. So it's
right.
Yeah. They want intimacy,
but they're scared of it. Exactly. Like it's a push and pull of where they want to feel close to someone. They want that strong emotional connection, but they also like aren't very trusting of people. They don't know how to develop those types of close relationships despite craving them and wanting them. So they've never been able to.
And people with fearful avoidant attachment, they don't believe that they're like worthy of love, but they also don't trust needing other people because they fear that they will be rejected. And they are usually like the result of like some sort of childhood trauma with like emotional neglect or abuse or even control. Like too many like kids that grow up in a super controlling households or where there's a lot of like mental illness and like the child has to become the parent in a lot of ways.
That
shows up in that way. So what are some of these ways? Okay, so a fearful avoidant might be getting hit with the parent that needs the child to do everything for them right now because it's a critical moment. They also might be hit with they wanting intimacy, but like also being really scared because this is a scary time. So if they're going through that, what are some things that they can do to recognize that this is just their fearful avoidant, you know, attachment style, and do some self-soothing to know that like they can emotionally regulate you know, clear with somebody, because most likely someone with this attachment style is going to attract the anxious attachment style, right?
Yes. Yep. And that can create just a really, really chaotic and unhealthy, unbalanced relationship. So boundaries are going to be essential.
Yeah.
Creating boundaries, you know,
communication.
Again, communication is going to be huge. Trying, you know, and part of understanding your own attachment is learning to also understand your partners or your friends or whoever it is that you're communicating with. So, you know, in communicating your own boundaries and communicating your own needs, understanding how that other person is going to perceive the way that you're delivering that. You know, just, you know, expressing your needs, things like, you know, I'm trying to think. I'm
setting a time, saying, hey, I recognize that you need a little bit of space. So I'm chill. We're chill. I'm going to give you a little bit of space. And hey, maybe we can watch a movie on House Party or whatever people are using tomorrow night or the night afterwards, and we can talk then. And just allowing room for that space, I think, is really important.
Yeah, yeah. And just giving space where it's needed and due, setting boundaries. Reassurance is important as well. Just that reassurance of, I understand that you are feeling this way. I need you to understand that I'm feeling this way. We're all good, but let's process this in ways that we can.
Absolutely.
Instead of one of us, you know, instead of that unhealthy dynamic of relying on the other.
What can you do if you're a person that is starting to feel that like pull backwards and you can't help it and you're gonna like ghost on someone? What would you suggest? Say somebody was writing in and they were like, yeah, I like this person, but they're becoming a little much for me right now. I don't know how to talk to them. I don't know how to tell them that or communicate that. How can we put together a sentence for this person?
I think, and this is hard for me to try to express because I am not this type of person. I don't generally dip out on people. I've never ghosted someone. I've never just straight up stopped talking to someone.
But what is the message as like a person who has an anxious attachment who's going to be on the receiving end of this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've said this to friends who have like come to me with this scenario. I think that like communicating honestly, not making excuses, not, you know, deflecting. You can communicate honestly without hurting someone's feelings. And especially if you are, you know, trying to maybe kind of step back from someone who is more on the anxious side, communicating honestly and gently is going to be really important. But so many people who have been ghosted and who have had that happen to them, I've had it happen to me before. Hindsight, it's fine because that dude ended up being a douchebag. But like someone on the receiving end just wants peace of mind.
Yeah.
They're going to be more mad at you if you just dip out and never talk to them again, or if you just stop responding to their texts and text them 4 months from now when you feel like it. They're going to really harbor strong negative feelings toward you if that's the way that you approach it. But anyone who has been ghosted, in whether it be a friend or a partner or whatever, all you want is that peace of mind.
Yeah.
That clarity. Just so like, hey, here's where I'm at. Sorry. You know, or not even a sorry. Just like, this is where I'm at. This is how I'm feeling. That's that. You know, take with that, you know, take that information as you will. And I obviously it would be different for, you know, whatever scenario, but like giving the person on the receiving end some amount of peace, some amount of context as to why you are distancing yourself. But like I said, you can communicate honestly and gently. You can be honest and upfront with someone without, you know, putting them down or being very negative about it or making them, you know, making them start to question themselves, because that anxious attachment, anxiety is going to kick in and they're going to be like, well, what if I did this wrong? Well, I can't do that in another scenario. When I'm trying to meet someone else, I have to not do this because then they're going to stop talking to me and things like that. So it's just like, it's a balancing act, but I think it's a really mature move to be able to communicate those kind of things to someone, and being able to communicate when you need to distance yourself from someone is going to be a very, very crucial relationship, you know, cornerstone when you do have a healthy relationship. Because even when you find someone that you do want to be around all the time and that you want to develop a healthy relationship with, there's going to be times when you need to express that you need your space, especially if you're someone who is avoidant. You're going to need your alone time.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But you have to learn how to tell people in an honest and direct way.
Yeah. I feel like I definitely have a disorganized attachment style, because sometimes I can be that person. And like, I'm not ordinarily that person. I'm ordinarily a lot very empathic, but at some point,
right,
there are people that break that boundary, or you just don't see eye to eye, and it's bad energy, and you have to shift away from them, and you feel like you're sucked into something. So, but I'm also, yeah, an introvert, so I do need a lot of alone time. Even though I'm anxiously attached, I need my alone time. So
yeah,
these are all just useful tools. So like, if somebody has a disorganized attachment style, which is another one, they're gonna have a little bit of all of these things, and that
definitely
comes when a parent themselves can be wonderful one minute and then You don't know what's going to happen the next. And so they get a little bit of all of these things. Or, you know, you go through different relationships where you play different roles, and then they
come up
from that, you can develop new issues.
Right.
So what does secure attachment look like?
Secure attachment is often, you know, communicating your needs with, you know, any of your loved ones, being able to just be upfront and talk about those feelings. Also being able to, you know, you have that strong capacity to understand someone else's emotions and be able to, you know, that exchange of energy of I'm sharing with you, you're sharing with me. And it's a really helpful for both of us exchange of energy. You know, someone with secure attachment is often very in tune with the emotions of other people, very sensitive to the emotions of other people. They are usually really responsive. Like when, you know, if someone, hey, I need to talk to you, someone with secure attachment is going to, you know, be available or make themselves available to help someone that they truly care about. They also generally have no issues expressing boundaries, setting boundaries, acknowledging them. They can be flexible, but they do know what they need and aren't afraid to ask for that.
Yeah. I feel like it's important to look at, like, if something is an equal energy exchange oftentimes. And so if you are feeling, like, drained after speaking to somebody or spending time with them, that's a sign that there's something off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or if the person doesn't recognize when you have, you know, good things going on in your life, you know, and that's a big thing too. That's because a lot of narcissists will, you know, not clap when you win. Or if it's not what they want you to do, they're not going to root for you because they can't control it.
Right.
I guess other things could be like people reaching out only when they want something, feeling just a general resentment all the time for somebody. When you speak to them, they're just constantly talking badly about other people, things like that, that just are very draining. And then like when you don't talk to them and you actually feel pretty chill having not been in their life,
big
sign too. So if you have any types of feelings where these come up for you often, then there's a chance that you have to put up some boundaries and work on your attachment style, I'd say. One of the biggest things that I like to talk about in regards to this is doing inner child work. And I think the idea of reparenting ourselves is really huge, no matter what our attachment style is, if we have childhood trauma. So I think that, like, you know, going through and reparenting ourselves in those moments where we feel anxious or fearful and asking, like, what our inner child needs, what it's craving, is so paramount to this healing process as well. And I know you and I have had to talk about this a lot because we're both doing so much reparenting work. So, like, you know, you can go into scenarios where you can be in your relationships. So, like, when your partner, you know, is there, they're not there to make you happy. They're there because they want to be there. And then you have the attitude of, like, I like you the way that you are, and I'm not trying to change you into the person that I want you to be. And, like, we don't give into each other's egos and all of those things. So reparenting work, I mean, where do we even start with that?
I mean, it's absolutely essential because, you know, and some people may have had healthy relationships with their parents at some point in their lives and then maybe lost that, or maybe now it's not as healthy, but it's just, you know, I have to do it because I had such a chaotic upbringing that, like, in every aspect of my life, I have to understand, I have learned to better understand, like, why I react certain ways when certain things happen, or when people express certain things to me. Like, you know, being able to accept criticism was like a huge thing for me that I could never do because I was being constantly criticized when I was a child, you know? So I needed to reparent and relearn how to accept criticism, because only thing I ever knew how to do, the only thing I was conditioned to do, was to shut down and to withdraw. And so that's what I did as an adult, because that's what I learned when I was little. And that was the only way that I could keep myself safe. So, you know, it bleeds into literally every single aspect of your life. You have to be constantly aware of, like, your inner child. What does your inner child need in this moment? Are you getting it? Now that you're a grown-up, you can acknowledge that. You can fulfill those needs for yourself, or at least determine ways in which you need to act in how to fulfill them.
Absolutely. I mean, and for me, reparenting myself is literally like sometimes just setting reminders on my phone to do certain things, because my body has three issues. I can't thread that I'm hungry or that I need to drink a glass of water, because my body doesn't feel it until too late, you know, until I'm already dehydrated. And then I'm like, what did I do?
Right.
Reparenting yourself can be as simple as setting reminders, learning to take care of yourself, me buying myself vitamins for the first time as an adult, and turmeric, and like saying to myself when this happened, as somebody who, you know, I have a compromised immune system, I can shut down and say, I'm scared to leave my house. I don't want to leave my house. There's this horrible virus happening, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with people who feel that way, but I knew that I needed to parent myself in that moment, and I turned it around. Tried to rephrase it as a positive and get in a higher vibrational state and say, no, this is a great opportunity for you to get healthy and, you know, have a better eating schedule and go back to school. Like, we can't do anything probably for 2 years, so why not take this time to take a back step, maybe go back home and go back to school, which I'm doing, and relook at, you know, Burn Black and see how far it is and how far it's come, and like think about what the future could be, and if I could make it the future that I want it to be, who do I want to be a part of that? What do I want it to look like? And I think that these are huge things that I did to be my own parent, because I'm not gonna call you. I mean, I could call you if I wanted to, but this is all the process. I don't want to make you my parent. That's not fair to you. And so have just been trying to have some positive self-speak, turning negatives into positives, looking at things that are blocks or limitations and reframing them into endless possibilities. And, you know, I can acknowledge the pain that is coming with this time and the fact that it is really scary. I can acknowledge that, and these two things can coexist together, which I don't know about you, but I was not raised in an environment where, you know, having two things existing at one time, cognitive dissonance is what they call it, was utilized. Everything was very black or white. Things are good or bad.
Right.
And so I was never taught of the gray areas all that much. And so part of my reparenting looks like reframing the story, reframing the narrative, reframing how the story ends. And so that was a huge thing for me, because I felt like I have been in this very low vibrational state, and I've been trying to get the vibration higher, but I get overwhelmed and it goes back to that low vibration. And I think that that's what happens when you have inner child wounds. So the things I have found helpful is, I know it sounds so silly, but reframing things is a huge deal, and setting reminders and doing that inner child work, asking yourself about your shadow, why is this coming up for me? What my inner child need in this moment? If I were to call Lauren, and Lauren was my mom, what would she say to me?
Right.
And then I have that conversation myself. And I'm doing the work, and I'm a big girl now, and I'm out of my diapers.
Right. Yeah, I love what you said about, you know, instead of spending this time, you know, being reminded of the past and being fearful, but like really rewriting the future and re-envisioning what the future will look like. Because I know when I was a child, the future looked very bleak. There wasn't a lot that was going to happen for me. I saw myself staying in my hometown. I saw myself ending up in prison, just like my mom. I was told constantly by family members that I was going to do those things. And so I had to, from the moment I left home, from the moment I went off to college, I had to start that long journey of rewriting that for myself. And so I like that this time now is like, yeah, we should be looking at the future. And maybe it looks a little bleak in the immediate future. And maybe things won't ever go back to exactly how they were before, or at least not anytime
maybe
soon.
That's a good
but like
thing.
I think that exactly. And I think that just reframing that and, you know, rewording all of that and how your brain thinks when you think about the fact that the world might not ever be the same, or that so many aspects of your life may change, that is probably a good thing. You can make that be a good thing, and you have to tell yourself that you will. Because when I was a child, I didn't think I had much of a future, you know. That was never a thing I ever thought about. I was worried about getting to tomorrow. And that's about as far into the future as I was ever allowed to worry about.
You are stuck in that trauma cycle of survival mode.
Yeah.
For your life.
Right.
And there, yeah, it's hard.
And we, yeah, it, and especially being in a time right now, it's hard not to live in that survival mode, you know, because like when you've been conditioned for so long to live in that survival mindset, and then you're put in a scenario where you're in this, you know, high anxiety, high pressure, lots of negativity of the world around you, and this fear and this, you know, food shortage this, and fear of getting sick that. You can be in that survival mode and be that like super hyper vigilant, like ready for, you know, the world to end mode, or you can acknowledge that that's an unhealthy way to be living, and you don't have to live that way. You can reframe that for yourself, but I mean, it's much easier said than done, and it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of reparenting work to get out of that mindset. But you have to start somewhere. What better time than now? All you've got is
what
time.
What is that radiance? The machine flow.
That's the bulls I'm creating.
Which one?
What did he say? It's like, what better place? Something. I forget. Anyway, look at me. I can't even quote Rage Against the Machine anymore. We're on credibility.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember that. I can't ever think of a song when I put on the spot. So what better place than here? What better time than
now? Anyway, on a side note, guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell a spooky story before we leave.
Ooh, I love spooky stories.
That has to do with my current future and also Rage Against the Machine. And that's why I thought of this. So I have family friends that own a funeral home. And in my small town of Delaware where I grew up, and I'm actually about to go live with them
because I'm gonna probably go back to school, and I'm trying to take the next step in my life and my career.
So I'm thinking about going back to my hometown, which is really scary, but I'm gonna do it.
And for a little bit, it's not permanent, and I'm gonna stay with my family friends that want a funeral home. So I'm finally becoming full-fledged beta solvist from my girl. And They are the sweetest people, and they used to drive me to work when I worked. I used to be a teacher. I taught preschool. And one day, Ray picked me up from work in the funeral van. And usually he just picked me up in his regular car, but this day he was running around like a crazy person, and there was a dead body in the back seat. And I was not prepared for it.
Oh my God.
I was about to go teach preschool. And I think he could tell that I was a little freaked out. And he turned the radio on, and Killing in the Name Of by Rage Against the Machine came on the radio. And Ray turned it all the way up and started car moshing with a dead body in the backseat.
Oh my God.
And he's like, I love this song. And I'm just sitting there in the 5 minutes that it took to get to the JCC where I was about to go teach preschool, not ready to have a dead body in the backseat while he's car moshing to Rage Against the Machine. And then I went and taught kids for the next several hours, and that's my story. And I'm so excited to move on.
I love that story. I love how different death, how all of us react differently to death. Cause like I am on his team with that. Like, I do not fear death. I am not afraid to die. I'm not worried about what happens when I die. I've always had a very healthy understanding of death, because my family owned a funeral home. Not my immediate family, but extended family owned a funeral home when I was growing up. I lost a lot of people when I was young. I started going to funerals at a very young age, so I've always just kind of understood it in a weird but peaceful way. But it fucked up to laugh, but
it's
because that, like, with absolutely.
And what I love about Ray is that, you know, there's. He think like the way he looks at it, I mean, we're Jewish, is such a blessing to watch over the dead. Like, he gets such joy out of it. Like, it's the last bit of dignity he can give people before they pass into the other
absolutely.
Realm, wherever the souls go. And I just love that attitude. I really do. And I think it's important to have a healthy attitude about death. I've thought about becoming a death doula in the past. I just think it's too much for me and my own trauma at this time in my life. But it was something I was interested in. And I think it is a very gracious thing to be able to watch over the dead. And I really got that from Ray. So I'm excited. They're such beautiful people. And I hope to have them on the podcast. They do not believe in astrology, guys.
Yeah.
They hate astrology. So it will be.
So, but wait. What are their placements?
Well,
and why
Gemini.
Do they feel that way? I want to know their signs.
But I think he would admit that he's very much a Gemini. He's a chatty man who is very analytical and knows a little bit about everything. He's not a connoisseur of anything, but he's a master of no trades, but a jack of all. He's kind of
I
remember one time he did a citizen's arrest at the Wawa because he found a guy that mugged a homeless man, and he saw it happen, and then he citizen's arrested him. That's Ray. I love him to death. He's a nice guy. And Leslie is amazing. She's an amazing cook. She makes the best queso I've ever had. Her dad was the Jewish baker in my hometown. And these are people who are the children of my biological mother's friends. They've known me since I was a baby. And, you know, it'll be nice to at least have that for a little bit, I suppose. I'm a little nervous about my emotions coming back, but I think it'll be okay, and I'm just looking forward to the future, whatever it may bring. And, you know, I didn't announce this yet, but I don't think she'll care. Casey is going to be coming back east soon, and I'm excited to see her, and she is getting married to French man. So, Yeah, I'm very excited Woo-hoo. To see my dear Chasey, who, if you guys follow me, knows is one of my bestest friends, a sister to me. So I'm just happy to have family, to be honest. So, you know, if the world ends, I'm with the people that I love. Yeah. So, looking forward to the future. Guys, we're going to get through this retrograde, and Lauren and I are going to try to do more consistent episodes. So if you have a topic you want us to chat about, we're here. We're here for
Yes, tell us, please.
Lauren, I love you, and we're going to do this again soon. Is there anything you want to plug or anything you're doing right now?
I mean, be outside. Like, you have to be outside. You can, I'm getting really sick. I'm going to stand up on my little soapbox for just a moment before this episode is over. You don't have to just stay home. Yes, you need to avoid other people, but you don't have to stay in the confines of the four walls of your home. You can go outside, and you should go outside, and you should breathe fresh air, and you should be in the sun, and you should smell all the smells and feel all the feels, because you're going to lose your fucking mind if you just stay inside constantly. So this stay home sentiment, while I get it, you don't have to stay in your house. Please get outdoors, stay away from other people, but do not feel confined. Get outside.
I know that there are killer rats out there now, guys.
Be smart. Yeah, there's killer rats in Chicago. You
maybe avoid
those.
Okay, aside from
that. But I think it will really help, and it's helped me. So it's got to help somebody else, right? You know, being able to just walk around the block, you would be amazed at how much, you know, how much getting that blood pumping and getting that sunshine on your skin will slowly start to pull you out of that dull funk that you've let yourself slip into, because I've been feeling it myself.
So you're plugging sunshine. That's my two cents.
I'm plugging sunshine, raindrops on your skin, being outside
you're
in the fresh air.
That's
my plug.
I love
Am I such
yes,
a Cancer
I
sun Pisces
it.
Moon?
When we discovered like, this week that she's wired like Lisa Rinna. I love it. Own it, baby.
Yes. Yep. I love that.
Jason will be your Harry Hamlin. I don't know if he makes pies, but we know that he makes blast beats.
He does. I've been cooking a lot too. That's another thing that you can do if you're trying to like use this time to be healthier. I've been trying to use this time to like learn how to cook healthier. So I've been like
making
all this mom food, and I'm forcing. Oh my gosh. I made like Korean cauliflower, and I made chickpea and cauliflower tikka masala, and I made leek and
you
tomato
recipes.
I'm like, I'm
being
creative.
Would you share some? Maybe we can put them to the show notes or something.
Absolutely. Yes, I would love to. I've been trying to take pictures of what I'm cooking, so I would love to share recipes.
Sure,
hell yeah.
We need to start a Facebook community too, so we can. Yeah, let's get the ball rolling and create a little BB community. The BB
Hive.
Yeah,
the BB Hive.
All right. I don't know if I have anything to plug this week, guys. I plugged that I changed my name. That was a pretty big deal, but...
Yeah, huge. In the middle of Venus retrograde.
Like that. And, I mean, I have a Gemini on my midheaven, so there we go. Guys, I love you so much. We're going to talk soon. Lauren, do you want to say goodnight?
Yes. Goodbye. Good night. Sleep tight.
Good night, George.
Go outside tomorrow.
Good night, Gracie.
And now for the self-care tip of the week. So this week I wanted to talk a little bit about the IC. and what the IC really has to offer us in order to nurture our inner child during this really difficult time in human history. So the IC is the fourth house cusp. Sometimes it can fall in the third house, but typically you'll find it in the fourth house. And it shows us our generational trauma, our past life trauma in some cases. It is the shadow self that only the people that we live with get to see. But I really think it's our inner child's needs. And so I put together a little bit of a list for each one of the IC placements and what they can do to nurture their inner child during this very tumultuous time in history. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and share with you some of my suggestions for the IC placements and nurturing acts that will help you self-regulate during this really difficult time in human history. So if you have a Leo IC, artistic expression is a wonderful way to nourish your inner child. So getting some paints out or whatever it is you do, whether it's a guitar or a piano, however you express yourself creatively, that will be super cathartic for you. I also feel like if you are living with other people that you can be playful with, because, you know, Leo is a sign of play. Playing any sort of dominant roles where you get to act out this fierce part of yourself, that could be really nourishing. And a Leo IC loves attention. So a really great way to get attention is also to give attention to those that you love. So whether that means creatively putting together a card for someone that you love in the mail and developing pen pals and things like that, where you can draw for each other, you can be creative with each other. I think that that's really important for a Leo IC. Any way that you can add play to your day will be great. So even if that means going outside and playing basketball for a few minutes, that might be very nourishing for a Leo IC. For a Sagittarius IC, you might find it very nourishing during this time to read about faraway places. You can't travel right now, so maybe planning a future trip or reading about, you know, adventures in other cities and countries out there could be really nourishing for you. You could make your own treasure map for your home with the people that you live in. You could do a scavenger hunt in the backyard, things like that. Getting back to those like adventurous roots, adding that to the house, finding really interesting pieces from other countries, that could be a very good way to bring that spirit into your house. Developing a ritual of prayer or connecting to spirit, that would be very good for a Sagittarius IC. And just trying to find any way to implement new experiences into the day-to-day, I feel like would be really good. So whether that's just trying a new recipe from another country or trying to go about the walk that you do in your neighborhood a different way and maybe trying to get lost on purpose, these are things that will really heal your adventurous spirit during a time where you can't be super adventurous. For a Gemini IC, I suggest journaling, catching up with friends from the neighborhood in a socially distant way. And then if you have a vehicle, just going for short little car rides with yourself, blasting the music, things like that are going to be very good. If you don't have access to a car, try your best to connect with other people on House Party or websites like that, where you're watching movies and you're talking about the movies and you're critically deconstructing them. These are things that will really feed your soul. For a Pisces IC, I recommended rituals involving water. So I think hot showers will be very nourishing for you. Spending time by a body of water, if you live near a lake or if you live near a beach, even just going by yourself will be so healing during this time. For a Virgo IC, making lists, getting organized, cleaning out your cell phone of contacts, of
people who don't like vibrate on your level, people who bum you out, delete. These things will make you feel more organized and connected. For an Aquarius, I see doing projects that make you feel unique, getting involved in social justice, even if it's from your home. These are things that are going to be really cathartic for you. Finding your own tribe online could be really great for the soul. And also playing music, getting connected to spirit, getting connected to nature. Even just like if you have a house, if you live in like a neighborhood where you can build a tent in your backyard and just going camping, even if it's in your backyard, these are things that will be really, really, really spirited for you. For an Aries, I see, I recommended going for long runs, exercising, getting all of that energy out is going to be so crucial for you guys. You need to move. So developing a new exercise routine, very, 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 very important. And finding a way to really exert the energy and wearing out your sacral chakra throughout the day, super important. And if you can't run and you're like stuck indoors and you're working from home, even just finding ways to take little breaks and having to do some jumping jacks. And like, this is not yoga stuff. This is moving your ass stuff. You need to find some way of just literally getting out there. So if that's like dancing in the living room for 30 minutes before bed, you need to do that. You need to move. For a Libra, I see blasting your headphones while you're on the treadmill. Anything where you're connecting to music as you're moving, that's going to be super important. Singing loudly. So even if that's like singing, as cheesy as it sounds, singing in front of your mirror, playing that song that lights you up, these are the things that are really going to make you feel good. If you have a Capricorn, I see, you might feel very restricted right now because you guys are worker bees. You need to have everything like you need to be moving. You need to be physically doing something with your life. You're very goal oriented people. So you could feel very stuck right now, especially with the number of people who've probably lost their jobs. So what can you do? So I think developing new projects in your home, that's really going to help you. So if you have like a place in your home that you've always wanted to make an office, but you know that you have to clear it out, and this is the time to start that project. This is the time to start a small business. This is like entrepreneurial energy. This is starting the lemonade stand in the front yard energy. So anything where you are finally motivated to do the thing it is that you love and make it your career, whether that's tarot, whether that's I don't know, any like graphic design, anything that you've ever had an interest in, whether that's starting your own recipes, building that Cancer midheaven, whether that's starting a project musically that you want to be the catalyst for your tomorrow, for your job, for what you want to do, for like, this is the time to tap into that energy. So if you don't know what it is that you want to do and you have this energy, I would say start with making a list of everything that you've ever wanted to do and start crossing it off and seeing what's really practical right now. Saturn is also like a very restrictive planet. So I think getting down to the things that you don't need could be very cathartic for you. So if whether that's just like canceling subscriptions that you aren't really going to use anymore, just like crossing things off of a to-do list, like that energy is really going to be quite helpful for you. Fixing things that are broken in the house, using tools, things like that, learning how to do home repairs could be very cathartic for you as well. So I would say if you're stuck at home, you never knew how to change a tire on a car or any of those things, this is the time to learn those things. Now, a
Taurus I see, they need a lot of rest and time to decompress. These people really, really value their alone time, their time for sensual pleasure, things like that. So I would recommend weighted blankets would be really, really great for someone with a Taurus I see. Soothing yourself with comforting family recipes and then sensual play with a loved one. And even if you're living alone, just being very sensual with yourself, aromatherapy, things like that are really going to be super calming for you. Getting yourself something fluffy to lay on, something very comfortable, getting some new pillows. If you're going to be at home more, make the place that you are at home very comfortable, very soft. These are things that are going to feel really good for you. I don't know. If you have a loved one and you're trapped indoors, maybe this is a nice time to pour wax on each other or something silly like that, or use food in some sort of play. Scorpio Pisces, they really need intimate conversations. Intimacy with a Scorpio Pisces. But then there's also like the fun side of the Scorpio I see that might enjoy telling ghost stories with a loved one, sharing secrets or tantric sex practices if you have a partner in your home. These are things that will help you feel more connected with a Scorpio I see. So keep sending me suggestions about things that you guys want to learn more about. These are my self-care tips for this week.
Of course you're a Pisces.
Right?
You're artsy and you're loving.
Ooh, maybe a little too loving.
Why do you say that like it's a bad thing?
My friend Jen thinks I'm a little clingy.
Is she a Scorpio?
Yes. Are you a little bit psychic?
I'm a Taurus. We know shit.
Thank you so much, peepees. This is the end of the episode. I want to thank Lauren. I want to thank everyone who is listening and sending questions, and all of you guys who message me and have the most insightful questions. I'm so impressed with you, peepees. You guys dig deep. You dive super deep. So next week we're going to be back with Hannah from Hannah's Elsewhere, who is a YouTube astrologer. I love her. She's from Northern Ireland. She has such a beautiful accent. And like me, she is an Aquarius with a Virgo rising, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. So stay tuned next week for more astrology. Until then, I love you guys. Take care.
Burn black.